Now, what I'm talking about when I talk about this mulling time, it's like daydreaming. It's like sleep, the sleep when you're awake. It's actually a free-floating sort of connecting up of things. And I think it's so important. And it's the things we it's the thing we lose most when our lives lose their routine. And we suddenly get this picture of ourselves being squashed up with no time to mull things over. And so I'd say for those people who are out of their houses and are in unfamiliar environments, try to put attention and energy into establishing a routine. And that will give you an enormous amount of spare energy if you possibly can. And even if you have to make several moves. Sometimes people make many moves. But try, wherever you move in, start to design a routine that will help you. Build a routine around your time. Don't get seduced by the idea that you've got a lot of work to do and we haven't got time to have a picnic on Sunday afternoon. Or just do nothing and sit in the sun for a while. You can't afford not to, because you'll run out of energy further down the track. So this sort of ordering of our lives protects against the slow degrading of the quality of our life, which happens when we actually don't have enough energy to hold on to what's important. And if you read reports of disasters, as I've read for years and years, actually it's interesting, if you go back before about the mid to late 80s, there's no talk about recovery. It just doesn't come on. It's not mentioned. You get these descriptions of how bad the event was, of the cleanup maybe, of the financial relief provided. That's it. No sense of recovery. A classic case was the Aberfan coal slip disaster in 1960-something. You know, a little town in Wales with a big coal slip on the hills beside. And one wet day it comes down and buries the village school, and there weren't enough kids to make a soccer team, they said afterwards. They had a massive clean-up, of course, funerals, very sad event. They had a nationwide fundraising appeal, and out of that multi-million pound fundraising appeal, every bereaved family got 41 quid per child, and the rest was spent removing the coal slip, the coal piles. And there was a visiting psychiatrist that would come several times a month for the next few years. That was it. You know, we've come a long way, actually. Well, you're saying that's Britain with their stiff upper lip. Actually, it was probably the same here. But you know, the notion of recovery was not on the agenda. So I reckon you would have huge numbers of people. In the 90s, it was the 30th anniversary. Somebody wrote a book about their survival. They said it was never talked about. And all the kids that survived married very early and ended up getting divorced. You know, there were whole patterns there of how this community was dysfunctional. Actually the same, I've been down in Dunalley and they asked me to go down and spend a bit of time talking to people after, you know, from the Port Arthur event. It's the 20th anniversary of Port Arthur coming up soon, 28th I think. Actually, the devastation in that community was enormous. Not just the shooting, but in the surrounding community, because, of course, many people who work there live in the local community. And so you get, there were multiple marriage breakdowns. A number of the professionals didn't just burn out and lose their jobs, they lost their careers. The local doctor, the local Anglican, and I think Uniting Church ministers left the church completely. You know, people, massive. And I hadn't realised this, but I was talking to a woman down there who's worked in that area at the time and ever since, she said, it has never been talked about. No one has ever talked about this in our community. And I know at the time I was down there and I was doing these meetings down there. We were trying to get it going. It didn't get off the ground, the recovery program. There were recovery services and counselling and so on, but there were a number of reasons why it just didn't get going. And so, you can really ask these questions. In Gendervik, I was told there's a little group of 10 houses that all burnt in Black Saturday. And the woman talking to me said, all of those marriages broke down. Now, the divorce rate's, what, 40%? Does that mean six of them shouldn't have? See, I think we really need to see that the real priorities are the important things of life. And that, yes, we need a new house and we need to look after our things, we need to get our farms going, but we must look after our health and our relationships and our marriage and our family and all these things. And that means we've got to factor in time so we've got the energy to do it and we get out of stress so we don't have that tunnel vision on one thing but can hold the whole complex tapestry. Because if you read these reports of disasters, they will often say the event itself was bad enough and I can accept that natural events happen that devastate us, but what I can't accept was the second disaster. And that's what happened during the recovery period. You get these things like after Hurricane Katrina in the United States where all these people evacuate, what do? They actually distribute them around the whole of the US in available housing. They get free houses. So you get some poor African-American family who live in New Orleans as part of a, poor suburb with fantastic local connections, and they end up being given a house on an estate in Seattle, where they know no one. And they're way out in the boondocks of, urban development of the edge of Seattle. And because they've been given a house, they've got enough capital resources. They don't qualify for a car. So they're out there and there's no public transport and they don't know anyone. And, life is terrible. That's the second disaster. The second disaster is what goes wrong during the recovery. And I just think this is such an important message to understand that that the recovery period, the negatives is it becomes a second disaster and a whole lot of things that shouldn't happen. Or the positive is that we take our time and we say this is the beginning of the next stage of our life, what's important to us and where are we going, and let's make a plan to get through it, to look after ourselves, to look after our health. Because our bodies will actually take so much punishment. And when we're stressed, we shut down the feedback system. We don't know how we feel. Other people would tell us, won't they? We've got to take recreation. We've got to unwind. We've got to get back in touch with ourselves. Around about this point in my talk, one dark wintry night in King Lake Central, there was a front row here, and in the front row was a great big man here with a little woman beside him, and he said at this point, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. Yes, sir. Does that mean I should go fishing? And I said, well, if you like fishing, I think, sitting on the riverbank with the birds and the sunshine and the tranquility, sounds fantastic. I think that's a very good idea. See, he said to his wife next to him. Obviously, fishing was a controversial topic between them. But I think it's absolutely right. People need to do what's important for them. Have I been talking 90 minutes? It's important that we factor those things in, but because the stressed brain will have this bias for work and problems, and it won't value things that don't appear to be directly associated. Don't get seduced by it. Try to keep enjoying life if you can, or taking time out to get in touch with the real issues. Okay, now I'll finish there, but I'll just accept saying this one thing. I was reminded last week when I was in Dunalley, they were using, not at Dunalley, in South Australia, they were talking about, that'd be a month or two, December, I think their fire was. So they're a couple of months ahead of you. They were using the term fire brain for when your brain can't work, you just can't do these things. In Black Saturday, they were talking bushfire brain. In Lockyer Valley, they call it flood brain. In North Queensland, they call it cyclone brain. In Christchurch, they call it earthquake brain. We know the physiology of the brain. When you're in that stress, there's too much cortisol in it. And when you've got a lot of cortisol in your brain, you can't do the complex, imaginative, forward-looking tasks. You've got to really take care of your brain. Make sure that you keep getting out of that cortisol state by valuing your time. That means doing a certain amount of work, and then that's the end of your day. You just actually have a bit of time to unwind. It'll mean that you will be connected with what you do, and what decisions you make will express yourself, and that what you end up with is actually yours, and it's your life, and it's filled with your values. But look, I'll stop there and see if anyone's got any questions or thoughts. Do you think there's an element of that, of actually trying to keep distance from the feelings? Because I think that's the other thing that happens, that we often... See, healthy people can just keep putting stuff aside. If you've got, you know, if you've got sources of satisfaction in your life, you can just keep ignoring difficulties, put them aside. But when it's like this and it's too big, those habits you've got away with ordinary problems are probably going to cost too much to do. And when life is seems too bleak, there's a strong tendency to just shut down or space out. I don't know if anyone watched the program on Port Arthur on the ABC last night. It was pretty horrific, I don't think they really need to replay all the gruesome details in the way they did. I thought that was terrible. I found it very hard to even watch myself. I worked with a number of people from that. But one woman said, who was very involved, that there was a certain point where she just wanted to go and play the pokies, because it allowed her to shrink her world down to this one little area. Now, this is probably something that people do more when they've got a trauma like that without having lost their house. You don't have that... Well, I suppose you could, but you'd have to be ignoring everything to go to the pokies. But for often with a trauma where everything else is intact, people will get into these spacing out zones. I think it's often harder to do that when you've got everything on your plate in a natural disaster. But I reckon we inadvertently will get into the position of just trying to push everything away. Or you get into this cycle of I can't stop. You can't relax. So you've got to try to break out of that, I'd say. Yeah. And you'll feel restless. try and actually sit down and go through that. Well, shall we have a... Is there a cup of tea we can have? Or we'll just have a chat? Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much.